between the COVID-19 pandemic and a challenge to the Affordable Care Act waiting to be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court, health care has become a big issue in the presidential race. We're taking a look at health care proposals from Democratic candidate Joe Biden, who plans to build on the Affordable Care Act, and President Trump, who has pledged for years to get rid of the ACA and replace it with something better. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What changes would you like to see to the health care system? Which candidate's vision for health care do you think would do the most good? Does either worry you? And what questions do you have about different health care proposals and the impact they could have? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Philip Rocco is Assistant Professor of Political Science at Marquette University and author of the book Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. Phil, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to be with you, Rob.
Well, briefly, before we dig into the plans, healthcare, is it shaping up as you see it to be a big issue this election season?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the list of issues that are at the top of voters' minds, healthcare is a little bit further down the list than it usually might be. But I think one reason that is that COVID-19 and the pandemic response more generally has soaked up a lot of public interest and attention. And it's sort of become a sort of photo negative for a lot of other opinions, including opinions about the economy and healthcare. So, I mean, I think, you know, regardless of where you put healthcare third, fourth, it is ultimately going to be a pretty big thing that's on folks' minds.
All right, let's look at each candidate in turn now. First, Democratic nominee Joe Biden. He was vice president when the Affordable Care Act passed. What are you hearing from him and his campaign when it comes to his vision for healthcare if he were elected?
Well, I think it's helpful to go through the different ways that people get healthcare, because the nature of the plan is going to vary really depending on what part of the healthcare sector you're looking at. So we could just start with the employer-sponsored healthcare. So Biden, unlike some of his rivals in the Democratic field, really did not propose any major changes. If you have employer-sponsored insurance, you're going to be able to keep that. The only thing that he really changed on that one was to extend COBRA protection. So if you lose your job during the pandemic, his proposal, like Democrats passed in the House, would extend 100% of subsidy for premium if you lose your job during the pandemic. The federal government would pick up 100% of your COBRA premiums. The only other change that Biden made to that, to the employer side of things, is to allow people who have employer-sponsored insurance to buy into a public option offered on the ACA marketplaces, which would look a lot like Medicare Advantage. Now, in practice, because of the nature of plans and the income level that people have who have employer-sponsored insurance, most people who already have insurance from their employer probably aren't going to opt to go on to the public option. But for people who work for small businesses and have insurance, their premiums and their cost-sharing tend to be a lot higher than folks who work for a larger employer. And so it's entirely possible that employers would effectively buy into that to that plan. So that would reduce some of the instability that's been in the sort of small employer marketplace. But when it comes to the really big changes, there's not that much on the employer-sponsored side. And when it comes to ACA marketplaces, there is a little bit more movement here. So one thing that the Biden plan would do would be to expand eligibility for financial assistance to include people who have over 400% of the federal poverty level, and make some premium tax credits a little bit more generous there. So if you're a 40-year-old making $50,000 a year, there's been a study from the Urban Institute that suggests that you would save about 32% a month on premiums under the Biden plan compared to what you would be getting now. And then there would be a reduction of out-of-pocket cost sharing, basically making all of the plans look like the best plan in terms of the cost sharing there. So, I mean, in the end, this is sort of building on the Affordable Care Act and taking some of the biggest gaps that were in the plan and and sort of expanding it. When it comes to Medicaid under the Biden plan, I mean, I think the really big headline thing for Wisconsinites here is that under Biden's plan, the public option would be available to people in states that have not chosen to expand Medicaid. And Wisconsin is one of those states, which basically mean that 176,000 people would be eligible to be automatically enrolled in that plan. So that's, I think, at least for Wisconsinites, that's a fairly large increase in the number of people who have insurance.
And I want to give a listen to Joe Biden talk about that on the presidential debate stage. Here's a listen.
It's only for those people who are so poor they qualify for Medicaid. They can get that free in most states, except governors who want to deny people who are poor Medicaid. Anyone who qualifies for Medicare would, Medicaid would automatically be enrolled in the public option. The vast majority of the American people would still not be in that option.
So this would be not a huge number of people covered, even in Wisconsin. Is that fair to say?
This would be, I mean, there are 12 states that have not yet expanded Medicaid. In those states, including Wisconsin, there are varying sort of eligibility or coverage gaps. Wisconsin's is on the smaller side in terms of those coverage gaps, but it is 176,000 people. And, you know, if you are one of those people and you're in that gap, I mean, it would mean, I think, quite a lot. But just in scale terms, it's not quite as big. I think one of the sleeper elements of Biden's plan that's not really been picked up on that much is lowering the Medicare eligibility age to 60. So if you are between the ages of 60 and 64, you could either keep the coverage you have or go into Medicare. Now, I think one of the reasons that hasn't gotten a lot of attention is people who are in their early 60s overall, on balance, tend to have insurance to their employer to a greater degree than younger people do because they're sort of brought in a different set of bargaining terms. But especially if the economy tends to be unstable right now, people who are in their early 60s are deciding about whether or not to let go, to retire, or whether or not they're let go, I mean, that could actually be pretty significant. An entry point of 62 would add, I think, 670,000 people nationwide who were uninsured to the Medicare rolls. So, I mean, overall, the Biden plan sort of looks like there are some major coverage expansions that we see there, but it's an attempt to do that in a way that does not really upset the apple cart of the existing system. So, you know, you're still going to have employer-sponsored insurance with some of the benefits of that, but also some of the churn that happens. And I think that the fact that we are seeing such sort of uncertainty in the economy and the fact that people who lose their jobs also lose their insurance, I mean, it doesn't necessarily in a big structural way deal with that, at least beyond the span of the immediate emergency.
Talking to Philip Rocco from Marquette University, looking at the presidential campaigns and their plans for health care. Let's turn to the Trump campaign now. He ran on the case that he would overturn the Affordable Care Act, that it didn't end up happening by a narrow vote in the Senate. What are you hearing from the Trump campaign about their priorities in a second term?
Yeah, this is actually a lot harder to describe because you've heard sort of conflicting things out of the Trump campaign. I want to try to be sensitive to both of those sets of things that we've heard. So on the one hand, the last sort of 4 years, the Trump administration has supported repealing the Affordable Care Act, both legislatively in 2017, which failed, but also through a lawsuit that is currently slated to go before the Supreme Court in a few weeks. Additionally, administratively, changing some of the rules, including allowing short-term health plans to go into the market that have more exclusions for pre-existing conditions, additional sort of eliminating of cost-sharing reductions to insurers who are in the marketplace. So, I mean, in general, in addition to sort of supporting repeal in the long run, the administration did a lot to make the policy more unworkable during its 4 years. At the same time, you know, there's been this executive order that came out from the administration a few weeks ago that has essentially said that it is, quote, the policy of the United States that people with pre-existing conditions would be protected. Now, in point of fact, it's hard to say what that means. So on the one hand, it could just mean that the ACA's pre-existing condition protections are the law of the land. But without premium subsidies, without Medicaid expansion, without a number of the regulatory devices that the ACA created, the meaning of that phrase, you know, protecting people with pre-existing conditions is sort of hard to square. And if you look at the, for example, the plan that was advanced in the House and Senate in 2017 by Republicans, the projected impact on the number of people who would have insurance was grim. Millions of people would in fact have lost it. But I think it's very politically challenging in an election year to be specific about any kind of plan that would, you know, nominally make major changes that would reduce the number of people who had insurance. And so I think it's been really difficult for the administration to sort of articulate a clear plan that, in a sense, supports the thing that they are talking about, right? The one thing that I think is very clear where the campaign is concerned is that getting rid of protections for people with pre-existing conditions is incredibly unpopular. And additionally, a lot of the other elements of the ACA individually, when you don't frame it as Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, are also popular. Once you start talking about it symbolically, then partisan sort of inclinations kick in and parties sort of go to their opposite, people in different parties go to their opposite camps. But I think that makes at least on the ACA side, kind of difficult to parse what the administration would do. I think that the lack of clarity gets sort of worse when you look at Medicaid. So right now, the ACA lawsuit that the administration's involved in would, if the Supreme Court, you know, agrees with the administration's position, would lead to the repeal of Medicaid expansion. Additionally, during the 4 years, the administration has pursued eligibility requirements within Medicaid that, were they not to be struck down by some lower courts, would have increased the number of people without insurance. And in the state where they were implemented, Arkansas, there was a huge drop in the number of people with coverage because of that. But
we're talking to Philip Rocco. Got to jump in, Phil, assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, author of the book Obamacare Wars. We're looking at healthcare plans from the Biden and Trump campaigns. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions of what you would hope for or worry about from either candidate. 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Phil Rocco, assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, comparing health care plans from President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Aaron is with us in Chicago. Aaron, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that one thing that frustrates me in discussing the failures of the ACA, because symbolically and in many ways, functionally, I think it's a win. But the people who are largely opposed to it are mainly upset by the massive increase to their premiums over the years and the decrease in the value of the plan. And I feel like premium subsidies doesn't really address that. And I want both campaigns to address the issue that it's the health insurance companies who are causing the ACA to fail. Like, their model of the higher the premium, the lower the deductible, and vice versa, is what's really causing this to fail. So that's
Phil. Thanks for the call, Aaron. Phil, she's saying we need to look more at the insurance company role in what people actually have to pay, even under the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are two parts of this, right? The first is that you know, insurance is a product that that insurers profit from, right? And so, yeah, the general structure of it, there will be if the product is ultimately the negotiations they have with providers are you know, get increasingly costly, they're passing on that cost to us so that they can profit. But the overall trajectory of like why healthcare has become so costly is that in general the costs that are being charged, you know, to the insurers and ultimately passed on to us have been going up. And really neither campaign makes cost control in this realm a sort of flagship part of their platform, right? It's about sort of plugging the holes. And, you know, at the end of the day, medical inflation is still going to be a lot higher than regular inflation. And in a way, because we don't really regulate the costs of those services in a substantial way, we have multiple payers, it can be really, really difficult to control those costs in the long term, which is why even if you are insured, your premiums and your cost sharing have probably inched up over the years. And so, you know, really, unless you see a plan that addresses that head on, you know, there's going to be a slow, steady increase and an increase in the number of people who are what our researchers call underinsured, meaning you have insurance, but it really doesn't pay most of the costs that you need. You're effectively paying twice.
Thanks for the call, Aaron. We'll go to Lee and Rui. Lee, hello.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Lee. Go ahead.
Hey, so we have a 19-year-old and an 18-year-old daughter, and I have good health insurance through John Deere. I'm wondering if the ACA is overturned. Will they lose? Is there a possibility they will lose their health insurance through my employer?
Lee, thanks for the call. Lee worried that his 19 and 18-year-old would lose their health coverage if the Affordable Care Act is repealed, Phil.
So if the ACA is repealed in its entirety, if the court agrees with the administration on the severability clause, there would be nothing preventing insurers from cutting dependents who are above the age of 18 but below the age of 26 off of the plans and off of your employer's plan. It doesn't mean that every insurer would do that, but especially if there's a sort of cost pressure on the insurer or the employer, they would have no legal incentive not to do that, right? And so I think it just in general is going to increase the probability that that happens.
Thanks for that call, Lee. Chris joins us next in Wazaki. Chris, hi.
Hi. I just want to point out that as somebody who's worked in healthcare for over 30 years, I think a lot of people don't realize that the rules and the laws that are changed don't just affect those that get their health care off of the exchange. So I have employer-sponsored health care, but the rules and laws that are changed and passed, those affect everybody. I mean, it isn't just those that are getting their health care off of the health exchange. And as somebody who was just diagnosed with breast cancer, of course, you know, it's concerning to me that, again, the rules that are made are going to affect even my coverage, everybody's coverage.
Chris, thanks for the call. Sorry to hear about that diagnosis and best to you. Chris, thanks for the call. And Phil, you were touching on this earlier. People think Affordable Care Act and sometimes think about the marketplace. As Chris says, this affects people with employer-sponsored insurance too.
Indeed. And Chris, sorry to hear about that diagnosis, and I wish you the best. I do think it's important to recognize that a lot of the regulatory provisions of the ACA applied far more broadly, yes, than the individual marketplace and the Medicaid expansion, but indeed applied to people with employer-sponsored insurance. And the previous example, the allowing your dependents to be on your insurance up to the age of 26 is just another example of this. Beyond that, limits on lifetime limits on out-of-pocket spending would be another example. But the list goes on, and in fact, it's hard to even summarize the number of changes that have, you know, unfolded. And I think for everything that we're able to say about how the repeal of the ACA would affect the health insurance market, everything we're able to estimate with sort of forecasts and projections, there's going to be a lot that we won't be able to predict, because the health insurance or healthcare sector is 17% of gross domestic product. And so, yeah, the effects will go very much to the protections that are in the law that affect everybody, even beyond the people who just gained insurance as a result of its passage.
Thanks again for that call. In our just last minute or so, Phil, do we need more information from the candidates, do you think, or do you think that there's enough to go on for voters at this point when it comes to healthcare?
I mean, I think the thing to note if you're a voter on this, which is that, like, probably what I just said sounded like an alphabet soup of jargon. But I think that the broad outlines of what's happened over the last 4 years give an indication, if not about the specifics, then about the direction of the two different parties' plans. The sort of the record of the administration has suggested that regardless of what the administration might have wanted, getting Republicans in the Senate and the House on board with any particular plan, even a repeal plan, was difficult. And so, I mean, it's likely that that would be the general direction of the administration in the future, even though they haven't been clear about it.
Phil, and thanks. We'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Rob.
Philip Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University and author of the book Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. He talked with us about the healthcare proposals from President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden.